Yes, so I don't know if people got the message. What we're going to be trying to do is a step called Ein Yaakov, and I think most of you were here when we talked about what Ein Yaakov is. It's really the Agada of the Gemara. And since there aren't a lot of Ein Yaakovs around, I wanted to pick something that you could really get from the Gemara. Now, normally, to learn Agada from the Gemara is cumbersome because you have five lines here, and then you go three vlat and two lines there. But there is one part of the Gemara that is the single largest block of continuous Agada that just goes on for 20, 25 blocks. That is the 11th paragraph of Sanhedrin. So essentially, the 11th is only Agadata, except for the last block. There's only one daf in the 11th paragraph that's not Agadata. Which means, in other words, what that means practically is that all you have to do is if you bring a Gemara Sanhedrin, you can follow along, because that'll be exactly the same as the Ein Yaakov, because it's all straight Agadata. Now, it's not 100%, there'll be a little discrepancies here and there, but if you have a Gemara Sanhedrin, you will have 99.8% of what you're going to read in the Ein Yaakov, and just follow it in order. That's kind of the basic idea. The first Mishnah of the 11th Perek of Sanhedrin will sound very familiar to you if you learn Perkei Avos. Right, we study Perkei Avos. Many have a custom. Like I said, you know, Orsabek used to have a minhag. I don't know when it dropped out. I mean, when I was here on sabbatical, I was here actually for a year around 15 years ago. And then, that's a sabbatical. So there used to be a minhag that Shabbos Mincha, right after Shabbos Mincha, between Pesach and Shavuos, everybody read Perkei Avos. It was almost like davening. If we davened Perkei Avos, people would like recite Perkei Avos. That minhag seems to have disappeared. I don't know exactly when, but be it as it may, whatever the reason is, as you know, there is an old minhag that to learn a perek of Pirkei Avos in the weeks between Pesach and Shavuos as a preparation for Matan Torah. Now, some people, Sfardim in particular, actually have the minhag to continue it until Rosh Hashanah. Right? So Ashkenazim typically go until Shavuos, Sfardim go until Rosh Hashanah. The idea is that since Pirkei Avos talks about midos, character building, and in order to merit receiving the Torah, one has to have good midos, so this is our preparation. Yeah?
I also read every Shabbos by myself, if the shul doesn't read. So yes. Last Shabbos I missed it.
Yeah.
Like I didn't read the third.
Right, read two this Shabbos.
The last one and this one.
Yeah, read two chapters, yeah. Because you want to be sure you finish it before Shavuos.
Right.
Now, you will notice, Pirkei Avos is Mishnah, right? It is Mishnah. Now, there is no Gemara on it, as a matter of fact, although obviously Chazal talk about it in different places, but there is no Gemara on the Mishnah itself. But you may recall, if you look in any Siddur, you'll see that before every chapter in Pirkei Avos, we recite a sentence, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek li'olam haba. Every single Jew has a portion in Olam Haba. Now that's not part of Pirkei Avos. That is actually taken from the Mishnah in the 11th chapter of Sanhedrin, which you're going to be learning. And the reason why it was appended to Pirkei Avos, it was stuck onto Pirkei Avos, is it wants to give every Jew a message of hope, that even though it looks like becoming a God-fearing Jew and becoming a righteous Jew is such hard work, and I'm never going to make it, and who am I, there's a message of hope that God said, you know, everybody starts off with a good share in the world to come. Now, it is, however, a little more optimistic than the Mishnah itself, because essentially that excerpt cuts off the rest of the Mishnah. It simply says, everybody has a share in the world to come. Wow, that sounds great. Okay, when I learned this mission, it says, everybody in the journey of the world to come, but the following people lose it. So we kind of leave out that part, because I don't want to scare people away. But Lamaisa, this Mishnah does discuss that even though every Jew enters the world with a share in the world to come, it's like an inheritance, right? Now you could say, everybody comes into the world with $1 million. Well, right, or whatever it is. But you know, you could take that $1 million and you can waste it, and you can dissipate it. Olam Haba is the same thing. Every Jew comes into the world with a right to get that world to come, but through certain behaviors, and really certain beliefs, more than behaviors, I think you'll see, you can lose it. Now, I do want to point out, though, that the good side of this is, even when you lose it, you can get it back through tshuva. That's very important. There is no such thing as a person who permanently loses olam haba with no way to get it back, unless God forbid he dies before he repents. Even then, the Kabbalists.
And wouldn't he come back?
Yes, so the Kabbalists give us the Gemara doesn't give it, but the Kabbalists give us the solution of reincarnation. But certainly, as long as you're alive, you can always do tshuva. That's very important. But until you do tshuva, you can lose olam haba. Now, let's go back. I talked about this the other day, but some of you guys weren't here. Let me go over this again, because there are three terms that's very important that we define. And the Rambam, in his commentary on the Mishnah, goes to great pains to give us precise definitions. We have olam haba. We have yamos hamashiach, the days of the Mashiach. We have Techiyas HaMesim, resurrection of the dead. These are three different things. Olam Haba is the world of the soul. There is no body in Olam Haba. Olam Haba is when a person dies and the body is buried in the ground. The soul is eternal, and the soul comes to God and is bound with God. And we are told there's extreme pleasure that you can't even imagine. It's not a physical pleasure. It's a spiritual pleasure. Pirkei Avos, in fact, says that 1 second of Olam Haba is greater than all the pleasures of this world. And Rav Dessler explains it in a very graphic way. What do you mean, all the pleasures of this world? He says, let's take all the pleasure that every human being ever had, from the beginning of creation to the end of time. And imagine you had a pleasure pill that somehow had all of that pleasure that ever existed. So he says, 1 second of Olam Haba is greater than that. That's the meaning of it. But Olam Haba, the Rambam says, this is very important, the Rambam establishes, is not a physical place. Now, this is a fairly radical statement, but it's become mainstream in Judaism. And the reason why it's radical is, in the rabbinic descriptions of Olam Haba, there's actually a lot of physical talk. Eating, drinking, wine.
Isn't that Mashiach thing?
Well, yeah, but the Gemara says it about Olam Haba. In Olam Haba, we will have the banquets of the Leviathan and everything else. So the Rambam explains all of that is just metaphor. Because the Rambam says, we really don't fully understand this spiritual pleasure. So we can only imagine it by taking the physical joys of this world, and then we figure that's going to be even better. So again, Olam Haba is purely spiritual, and that exists right now. Right now, we go to Olam Haba. Yeah, I'm just going over some stuff because most of the people weren't here.
So
yeah,
that means that when there is Techiyas HaMesim, that people who are in Olam Haba are going to come back to this world, and then
that's correct.
But well, let me pulling them out of there.
Well, let me go in order though. Okay, because I'll get to Techiyas HaMesim in a second. Now, Yemos HaMashiach is very much this world, and Yemos HaMashiach basically means there's going to be a human being who will be a descendant of David HaMelech, who is going to bring the Jews back to Israel, those of them who are not yet fortunate enough to be here. It's interesting, Rashi makes the point, you think when Mashiach comes, everybody's going to jump to get to Israel. He says, no, he says, Mashiach is going to have to come and schlep people with chains and drag them to Israel, because a lot of people will be more comfortable in Florida or whatever it is. So even when Mashiach comes, it's not necessarily, well, I'll visit for Pesach, the Korban Pesach, but why do I have to leave my house in Maryland or whatever? Okay. So Mashiach is what? The reestablishment of the Davidic monarchy, the building of the temple, the ingathering of all the exiles of Israel, and a very great blessing that there will be peace in the world, and not everybody will be Jewish. In fact, the Gemara says, we're going to read it here, the Gemara actually says that we will not accept converts in the days of Mashiach. People who want to become Jewish, the door is closed, because we only accept converts when to be Jewish is hard, so to speak. Meaning to say, if you want to be Jewish in this world, you must be sincere, because who would be crazy enough to take it on voluntarily? But when Jews have all the blessing and all the prosperity, then once again, we're not sure how sincere you are. You just want to get on the bandwagon. So there's actually a halacha. We don't accept converts when Mashiach comes. But still, the world will believe in God, and there will be world peace, and it'll be a very blessed time. But what's important is, it is still fundamentally a natural world. People will die. Even Mashiach will die, like King David died, and will be replaced by a successor and the like. Now, that will go on. We're not really sure how long. Some Gemaras indicate the Motzei Mashiach is 1,000 years, but we're not really entirely sure, because once again, the days of Mashiach are described as Shabbos, and by analogy, 6 days followed by Shabbos, 6,000 years followed by 1,000 years. And then we have what's called Techiyas HaMesim. Now, what Techiyas HaMesim is, the way to look at it, I described it the other day, is essentially you're bringing Olam Haba into Olam Hazeh, meaning to say that all of the souls that are presently in the world to come get reunited in their bodies. But that's not, you are raising the question, well, that sounds like a demotion, that sounds like going down. Really, it's the other way around. It's the idea that the dichotomy between physical and spiritual is going to collapse. And what's going to happen is that the physical will now become spiritual as well. You don't need two worlds anymore. It'll all be one, and that will be eternal. Once you have resurrection of the dead, that really brings us back to the Garden of Eden. And the Garden of Eden is where we started. So it's a funny thing. All of our history is to simply get us back to where we were in the first place. And that's kind of the ultimate goal, the ultimate reward. The eternity of Olam Haba gets realized within a framework of Olam Hazeh. So it's important that, and what is called, I'm going to use a highfalutin word, a Jewish eschatology. Eschatology just means end of days idea. We have many different stages. We have Yemos HaMashiach, we have Olam Haba, we have Yemos HaMashiach, we have Tchias HaMesim. Now, there are then some generic words which could refer to any one of these stages or all of them. For example, Liyasid Lavo, in the future this will happen. But you don't always know which stage you're talking about. You've got to look at the context. Or Acharis Hayamim, the end of days. So those are, I would call, all-purpose terms that sometimes refer to Mashiach, and sometimes refer to Tchias HaMesim, and sometimes refer to Olam Haba. Okay, they don't have precise definitions. By the way, let me just inform you, again, you may know this, that there's even a machlokas, how will the third temple be built? Right? We're going to have a third Beis HaMikdash, and that'll never be destroyed. According to Rashi, the third Beis HaMikdash will come down from heaven, meaning to say there will be no human building at all. Now, I'll tell you, I think around 3 years ago. I don't know if you remember this or they even talked about it, but directly over the Har HaBayis, it's actually on YouTube, but I think I remember seeing it. Directly over the Har HaBayis, it looked like a UFO, big flying saucer. I'm not crazy. And it was coming down with really amazing speed. It was hovering over the Temple Mount, and then it flew back up again with amazing speed. It's almost as if, and maybe it was, that, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was deciding, should I put down the Beis HaMikdash? Nah, not really. Yeah, you know, it's really had that
noise.
It was quiet.
It was like a military drone.
I'm sure it was probably something that has a naturalistic explanation, but at least as an image, it's an unforgettable image, really, sense of the Beis HaMikdash, you know, coming down. But the Rambam doesn't learn that way. The Rambam, now we don't know, I can't tell you who the halach is like, because Hashem is going to decide, but the Rambam says in the Law of Kings, Hilchos Malachim, that it is the job of Mashiach to build the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, it's interesting that the Rambam says, here I think there's a question of circularity that's a hard question, and that is, somebody comes and says, I'm Mashiach. How do you know whether he is or not? How do you know? So the Rambam says, if he is successful in building the Beis HaMikdash, that proves he's Mashiach. If he's not successful in building the Beis HaMikdash, then he's not Mashiach. Now, that's what the Rambam said. Now the problem with that, we'll get into this because the Gemara itself will talk a lot about this. The problem with that is there's a certain circularity, because if a guy claims he's Mashiach and he wants me to help him build the Beis HaMikdash, I'm not sure what the answer is. Should I follow him or not? Because he's only Mashiach if he gets the job done. But I don't know if he's going to get the job done when he asks for my assistance. So it's a little difficult to kind of say, you only know somebody's Mashiach by the end of what he does, and you don't really know for sure at the beginning. Okay, we'll talk about that. But that's a big machlokas, Rashi and the Rambam, if the Bayis HaShlishi is going to come down from heaven, or Mashiach's job is to build the third temple. Yeah.
So according to the Rambam, if you do go after this, like Mashiach, and he's not able to do it, is that a sense of kfira?
Is that a what?
It's like, is that kfira?
No. So here's the important thing. This is also a very important idea. You know, we've had in our history a phenomenon of false Mashiachs, right? We've had that all the time. Jesus of Nazareth, Yashka, is an example of halachically a false Mashiach. Yashka, in his lifetime, never made a claim of divinity. And in fact, for at least several hundred years after the death of Yashka, the church was still undecided whether Jesus was divine. That was a very big split in the church. The only claim that Jesus made in his lifetime, by the way, Jesus is nothing more than Greek for Yahushua. It's not, there's nothing sinister in even saying the name Jesus. We don't say, it is not proper to use the term C-H-R-I-S-T. That is not proper because that is Greek for Messiah, for Mashiach. So you don't call him that, but Jesus is just a name. So there's nothing more than that. But he claimed to be essentially Mashiach, and he was a false Mashiach. However, let's take Bar Kokhba as another example. Again, just to be sure people can locate this, actually this is relevant to Sefiras HaOmer. The second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed by the Romans in the year 70 of the Common Era, okay? And the Jews were still living in Israel. They were not kicked out of Israel, but, you know, Yerushalayim was destroyed, devastated. The country was devastated, obviously. Thousands and thousands of Jews were killed or sold into slavery, but there were still Jews that were living in Eretz Israel. Now, around 60 years later, the year 130 or so, there was a great, great revolt. The Jews struck back. A great, great revolt that was led by a person whose name was Bar Kokhba. Now, Bar Kokhba was not his real name. His real name was Shimon ben Kuziva. Bar Kokhba means son of a star, and Rabbi Akiva gave Bar Kokhba the name son of a star, because the great Rabbi Akiva actually believed that Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. And he actually saw in Bar Kokhba's revolt that he was the Goel that would redeem Am Yisrael and rebuild the Third Temple. There actually is archaeological evidence on the Temple Mount that a Third Temple was commenced shortly after the destruction of the Second Temple, and many surmise this was under Rabbi Akiva's guidance, because Bar Kokhba initially was very, very successful. Bar Kokhba recaptured from Roman domination 900 settlements. Coins were minted with Bar Kokhba's likeness, but Bar Kokhba was eventually killed. Hadrian, the emperor Andraionus, don't confuse this, Aspasianus, is Vespasian, who was the emperor who was ruling when the temple was destroyed in the year 70. That's Vespasian. And his son is Titus, who actually destroyed the temple. And Titus later became emperor himself when Vespasian died. The bad guy of the Bar Kokhba revolt is Aspasian, I'm sorry, is... Aspasianus is Vespasian. I just mentioned the Hebrew name of Hadrian, but he's Andraionus. Andraionus is Hadrian. Andraionus is a different king. Hadrian was even worse than Vespasian, because we don't realize this. The destruction in the aftermath of Bar Kokhba numerically was even more devastating than the Churban Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara gives numbers in the millions, even if the Mefarshim say these numbers are guzma. But it's interesting that the fall of Beitar was the last crushing of the Bar Kokhba revolt. And that was also on Tisha B'Av, right? So the two Tisha B'Avs, the year 70 and the year 135, both tragedies occurred on Tisha B'Av. And Beitar was crushing, and Yerushalayim was totally destroyed. At that point, Jews were not even allowed to live in Jerusalem. And it was turned into a Roman temple to Jupiter, Aelia Capitolina, and Jews could not even come into the city for 200 years from that point. And in fact, even the designation of Eretz Israel as Palestine came from Hadrian. Hadrian wanted to remove any Jewish connection to the land of Israel, so he called it Palestina, which means land of the Philistines, Now, the Philistines had been long gone. There weren't any Philistines even in Roman times. They were an extinct nation. But just as the Arabs today, you know, there's an Arab propaganda which is so ridiculous, but people believe it, that the Jews really have no connection to the Temple Mount. I mean, you see, there was no temple. It's amazing, but there was no temple. Well, he wanted to create a belief that Jews had no connection to the land of Israel. Now, I'm bringing this up because here's the question. Was Rabbi Akiva wrong? I mean, Rabbi Akiva was the greatest of the sages. He thought Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. Was he just wrong? Was Bar Kokhba a false Mashiach? Was Bar Kokhba like Jesus? Was Bar Kokhba like Shabtai Tzvi, you know, much, much later? So here we have to make a chiluk. And that is, there's a difference between fraudulent Mashiachs and people that Hashem may have designated as Mashiach, but the generation is not worthy of it. Meaning, here's the thing. We believe Mashiach is a human being, and we believe Mashiach can come every day. So let me ask you, if we believe Mashiach can come today, Mashiach can come tomorrow, that means there's somebody alive today that can be Mashiach. It has to be. Or, if Mashiach could have come 100 years ago, there must have been somebody alive 100 years ago who could have been Mashiach. And 500 years ago. What happened to that person? He died, and somebody else took his place. So, the issue of whether somebody's Mashiach, and this is a little relevant to the Chabad discussion, but I don't want to go directly there. The issue of whether somebody's Mashiach is not only, is he false or is it true? Somebody could be a true Mashiach, but because of the sins of the generation, he's not yet worthy of doing his job. And maybe he doesn't even know he's Mashiach. So many have said you have to differentiate between a false Mashiach and a failed Mashiach. Bar Kokhba was not necessarily a false Mashiach, but because of the generation, Rabbi Akiva was right. He could have been the Mashiach because of the generation. He was not allowed to complete his mission or even do his mission. There's a stop. That doesn't mean Rabbi Akiva was wrong. That just means that the generation was not worthy for whatever reason. And in a sense, this is one of the ways one could look at Chabad. Again, I don't want to get into it too much. And that is the following. When Lubavitcher Rebbe was alive, one might say, he was at least a candidate, you know, to be a person. I mean, so listen, somebody has to do it, and it's probably not me, and I don't want to say not you, but probably not you either. I really shouldn't say it, but, you know, that would be my educated guess. So somebody has to be it, you know, and why shouldn't some Gadol B'Torah be the one, assuming, of course, he meets the Davidic line requirements, which he did, you know, and the like. So the concept that we can, say again?
Where are these requirements mentioned?
The Rambam. The Rambam, in chapter 11 of the Laws of Kings, enumerates the requirements for somebody to be Mashiach.
Yeah,
his source is actually taken from different passages in the Gemara, but they're scattered passages and the like. So it doesn't bother us so much that you could identify somebody as potentially Mashiach, but once again, the assumption is once he dies, generation wasn't worthy, there has to be, you know, somebody else, you know, that's how it works. Because once you start saying Mashiach comes back from the dead, you get into two problems. Number one, you're affirming the second coming, which is a fundamental doctrine of Christianity. And number two, if Mashiach comes back from the dead, so why not David HaMelech? Why should it be the Lubavitcher Rebbe? I mean, all right, if somebody's alive, all right, so we want somebody to be alive. But once you're choosing from the dead, you got a much bigger range of choices there, right? So why the Lubavitcher Rebbe? David HaMelech should be the Mashiach, right? So it's hard to know. It's hard to know. I think in some ways they were so crushed because really they did so much believe that the Rebbe would reveal himself as Mashiach that they just could not give up. Or many could not. Some have. But many could not give up that
because it's very like learned rabbis that still say it's Mashiach. They obviously must have some sort of.
I'll tell you the truth. You know, I respect your word. I am not an anti-Chabad person by any means at all. So I'm not going to be mezalzel in them. But I will tell you this: when the Rebbe was still alive, they used to publish pamphlets and books that say, well, the Rebbe has to be Mashiach because he's alive, and all the great tzaddikim are not alive, and the Mashiach has to come from somebody who's alive. And they were pushing that. As soon as the Rebbe died, all of those books got withdrawn. Immediately, they have a lot of writers who can write very quickly. And then they started writing all sorts of books on Mashiach and go back from the dead, which was a specific position they were rejecting before the Rebbe died. So they turned on a dime. In other words, they were like yelling and screaming, Mashiach has to be somebody who's alive. And then a day later, they just change everything. So they're able to kind of write books like overnight. They're just able to produce a lot of material. So, you know, okay. But I don't know. I don't have a full explanation of their theology. I mean, I would say that most of the Torah world, even those who respect Chabad as I do, don't accept that part of their theology. But again, I do want to say something else that's very important. The fact, it's important not to confuse something that might be mistaken with something that's heretical or apikorsis. This is absolutely critical, because particularly in Israel, the word apikorsis, kfira, gets thrown around much, much, much too loosely. Do I believe that Chabad is mistaken if they say the Rebbe is Mashiach and come back from the dead? Yes, Chabad is mistaken. My belief, I may be wrong too. Is somebody an apikoris if they believe the Rebbe is Mashiach? Absolutely not. It is not kefira. It is not heresy. It is not, you know, a violation of the fundamental tenets of Judaism. It is, in the opinion of many people, a mistaken idea. But not every mistake rises to the level of heresy. Now, if a person didn't believe there's such a thing as Mashiach, even if he's a nice guy, that is what we would call apikorsis. If a person believes the Torah is not from Hashem, that is what we call apikorsis. That is what we call kefira, heresy. But if a person has a certain mistake, he thinks somebody's Mashiach and it turns out that he's not, as long as the person was Torah observant, or as long as his candidate for Mashiach is Torah observant, the most you could say is it's a mistake. Not every mistake makes a person an apikoris. Okay, that's very important. So the word apikoris is thrown around much, much, much too loosely. Okay? There are mistakes, and there might even be stupid mistakes. But a person could be stupid, and he's not an apikoris. In fact, it's interesting. Somebody asked Reb Chaim Akasha, apropos of nothing here, but somebody asked Reb Chaim Akasha, if I argue on the Gemara, am I an apikoris? So Reb Chaim actually said, even if you argue on the Gemara, you're not an apikoris, you're just an idiot. this is what Reb Chaim said. And people can be idiots and all sorts of things, but it doesn't make them an apikoris and the like. Right? So one has to be very careful about understanding all that. Okay, I think Wednesday we stop a little early because I have another shiur. Okay, maybe we'll stop here. So again, so those of you who want to follow inside, so just all you need is a Gemara Sanhedrin. And we'll be able to follow everything inside with the Yom Yom. Okay? All right,
thanks so much.
Take care.
Thank you.